From the Coast Range Association, this is Coast Range Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gaskill. So we talk a lot on this show about the devastation wrought on our environment and communities by invasive capital. And today we actually get to talk about something tangible we can do to fight back. On September 26th through the 28th, Wall Street investors will join timber corporations, big oil, carbon offset developers, and biomass companies in Portland for their annual Who Will Own the Forest conference. This Timberland Investment Conference, quote unquote, brings together some of the world's biggest climate polluters, corporate forest clear cutters, and false climate solution peddlers. With tickets costing over $2,000 apiece, you kind of get a picture of the attendees. For anyone who's watched the Godfather movies, I liken this conference to the scene where the mafia bosses are all gathered around a cake with an image of Cuba on the top, divvying up the pieces of the island and deciding who gets control over what. But instead of who will own the forest, we should be asking who should own the forest. Should forests even be owned? And should the greatest permanent value of our forests be reduced to quarterly returns for corporate investors? Well, a coalition of groups, including various 350 chapters, Indigenous Environmental Network, Rainforest Action Network, the Coast Range Association, and many more, think these are some of the questions that should be asked at Who Will Own the Forest. And even though we weren't invited to the event, we're going anyway, and we want you to come with us. So I'm going to talk about Who Will Own the Forest, our response, and how to get involved in disrupting invasive capital's plans. And to do that, I'm joined by Brenna Bell, the Forest Climate Manager for 350 PDX. She has been deeply involved in forest defense for over two decades and is the co-founder of the Pacific Northwest Forest Climate Alliance. You can also go to forestsoverprofits.org to learn more about this event and get involved. That's forestsoverprofits.org. Okay, Brenna, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Michael.
Yeah, so let's just start with the basics. You know, what is Who Will Own the Forest? Where is it happening and when?
So this conference has been happening for many years, but I think we in the activist sphere have just recently caught wind of it. It is the World Forestry Center's signature timberland investment conference. For those of you who don't know, the World Forestry Center is partially publicly funded. It's in the same complex as the Oregon Zoo and the Japanese Garden up by Washington Park in Portland. It's really bringing together a lot of people with a focus on how do we make money from forests. And that is not the question that those of us working to counter it think is the foundational question that they should be asking for. We're going to approach them to let them know that the focus and the tenor of the conference is fundamentally at odds with community and ecological health.
Yeah, and you kind of already touched on this a little bit, but let's dig a little deeper into, you know, what is the point of a conference like this? And what are the things that, and we're going to get into the specific organizations and players that are attending, but, you know, what are they trying to get out of this?
As far as I can tell, having never attended one myself, the main thing they're trying to get out of this is increased return on their investments. And that is the focus of capitalism, is to have money to invest in something and then to make more than you put in, right? And so all profit, I feel, requires exploitation of somebody or something. Otherwise, you would not get any profit from it. So it seems like, in my very cynical mind, the goal of this conference is to figure out how to better exploit the land and better exploit people so rich people can get richer. I think that they would probably say it's about something else.
Sure.
As capitalists often like to argue that their investments are what makes progress, what makes innovation, what makes life better for us. But there is a shadow side of all of that. And I think Oregon's forests and the communities that depend on them have really been hit, especially by the extraction of all that wealth.
Right. Yeah, as Chuck often says, you know, this, like, companies like the ones attending there deploy capital like a weapon. Mm-hmm. And we'll hear more about that in a bit. Could you talk about the main sort of like buckets that the attendees would fall into and some of the main players? You know, for instance, like there's a lot of finance, global finance represented. There's a lot of large timber companies represented, some of the false solutions. So first talk about kind of how you think about the different types of people coming, and then if you want to talk about any of the specific actors.
Sure. I think that those are really good buckets, as you say, to distinguish some of the types of groups. I would add a fourth, which is the lawyers and law firms that represent all these interests, because I'm a lawyer myself, and I saw that I could get continuing legal education credits for attending. So they're trying to educate lawyers on how to best help capitalists do this as well. So that's bucket four. But back to your first three, one being the financiers. And these include, you know, just huge investment firms like JP Morgan, Campbell Global, and one that we've been particularly focused on in the North Coast, which is TIAA. And that is a pension fund that invests teachers' pensions, which, you know, we love our teachers. We want their pensions to grow. However, like I was saying, the foundational problem with capitalism is it requires some kind of exploitation in order to grow profit. And TIAA has decided that one of the things they want to invest in is clear-cutting Oregon's coast range. And so now they have a subsidiary called Nuveen, who owns huge swaths of land in Clatsop County and some in Tillamook County that they are clear-cutting for teachers' pensions. And when we talk to teachers about it, they're horrified, right? It does not seem like the type of investment that they want to happen in their pensions. But, you know, there's a whole movement nationwide for TIAA to divest from climate change causing activities like fossil fuels and forestry. So there's the investment firms whose whole reason for being is to grow money, to grow wealth. That's what they do. You know, growing wealth, not forests. And so that's one section. So I think that those people are specifically here to think of how can we make our forest investments grow more wealth for our shareholders or our pension holders. And then there's the timber companies like Weyerhaeuser and Hancock and Sierra Pacific, who are more and more, like especially Weyerhaeuser, becoming real estate companies. But the structure of ownership is shifting from them focusing again on growing forests for a sustained yield over time for communities and workers to growing investment dollars. Which is just a completely different way of approaching forests, because it means you log at different times, you invest in different times. If you're really thinking about how to get the most value of it now, as opposed to how to grow this forest in perpetuity as a resource for the community. And then there's the false solutions people. These are the ones who are peddling carbon offsets, who have very little impact on climate change, and mostly just displace the impact, because the communities where the carbon is still being emitted don't get any benefit. And the communities where the offsets are happening, often, you know, internationally, we've seen things where multinational companies will buy up land that indigenous people are on to plant trees for their carbon offset and kick everybody out. And so the community at the site of origin where the carbon pollution is happening is impacted. The community at the site of the offset is impacted. And the only thing that benefits is the company, not the climate and not the communities involved in anything. So they're coming. And then maybe my new favorite enemy is a British energy company called Drax. And Drax focuses on generating biomass energy. And they chop down trees, and they do use some byproduct from forests, but not exclusively. And they chop down these trees, they use these byproducts, they grind them up, turn them into wood pellets, ship them overseas, burn them, and call it climate neutral, net zero in terms of carbon. And they want to expand into Washington and Oregon. Currently, Drax is trying to build a new biomass pellet producing company or facility in Longview, and then ship those overseas, probably to Asia, where they will be burned for energy. And they call it a climate solution, and we fundamentally disagree.
Yeah. And real quick, before you move on to law firms or any of these other actors, I just want to plug real quick a couple of things. We actually just did a really great Coast Range Radio episode on biomass, which folks can find on our website or by searching Coast Range Radio on your podcast feed. That was a super engaging and informative episode. And also, if folks want to learn more about financial forestry, like why Weyerhaeuser is actually a real estate company, for instance, instead of a timber company, you can find some of Chuck's research at coastrange.org. And then also, in terms of some of these carbon offset developers or exploiters, you know, you have BP coming in, Google, who are major, major players in sort of these false offset schemes. But sorry, I interrupted you while you were on a roll there.
Not at all. But yeah, that fourth bucket, I think it's important to recognize the role of law firms like Stoll Reeves as sponsors of this conference. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you can think of lawyers as the profession or the people who are like lubricants for the system. We are the ones who know how to make things easier for everyone in some ways, navigating complex legal issues, navigating financial transactions, or in my case, gumming up the system as an environmental attorney, trying to stop that from happening. But don't overlook the lawyer's role in this, because it is, you know, important to know that there are the companies that are making money, and there's also these firms that are employing skilled people thinking, how can we grease the wheels of capitalist exploitation of the land? So just have to call them out, because they're definitely a part of this equation as well.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and in our team's research around some of the sponsors and attendees, I can't remember which law firm it was, but one of the law firms was bragging about how they pioneered the legal framework around how to transition timber companies into these kind of like shell real estate companies, these real estate investment trusts and things like that. And so, yeah, we can't forget about the role that lawyers are playing here. A potential fifth bucket is, you know, there are probably some of these attendees that are going there in good faith, or at least somewhat good faith, right? And but I wonder if you wanted to, before we talk about our response, if you had anything more that you wanted to say sort of on who will own the forest itself, or any of the other kind of actors involved.
Mm-hmm. What I keep coming back to is the name and the cost of attending this conference, because I think that really speaks to the vibe they are creating, the context, one could say, and the type of people who have, you know, $1,500 to $2,000 to drop for a 2-day conference, right? The mm-hmm. The focus is ownership. That's the question. There isn't a, it's not a curiosity. Should we own the forest? As you said, is forest ownership even a good thing? The foundational assumption is someone should own the forest. And the question is who? And the question is who will make the most money from the forest? Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, I absolutely agree with you that not everyone going to this conference is, you know, going with malevolent desires. Probably most people are going who say they love the forest. They love the animals. They love communities. And yet they have a responsibility to their shareholders. And they're not wrong. I mean, the way capitalism is set up, the way these structures are set up, they have a legal responsibility to maximize their pension investments, right? And the way our legal system is set up, they can do that through forest exploitation. So many people might just say, well, we're just doing our job here. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's a thing to remember when we're thinking about the attendees, is they are just all participating in a bigger system that exists. And I want to also think about who's excluded. And I think who's really excluded are people who work in the forests, are people who make their livelihood from the forest products industry, people who get their drinking water from the forest, people who make their livelihood as sport fishers that depend on the forest. There are so many local level jobs that are impacted by the fleeing of capital away from Oregon into the pockets of shareholders out of state.
Yeah.
So thinking about who is there, and then it's thinking about who isn't there, who isn't benefiting from this. Even people in the forest products industry are not benefiting from this.
Exactly. And we're going to talk about this in a minute, but, you know, that's why In fact, this is a good point to segue, because one thing I'm excited about with our response is we are going there to protest, to rally, to make noise, to make our voices heard. But we're not just doing that. We're organizing an alternative conference that will explore these themes in depth and really point at a positive, intellectually rigorous vision for what environmentally and socially responsible forest management and forest stewardship would look like. So we're not going there simply to say no. We're going there and saying no, and here is the actual way forward. And that's one of the things that I think is really exciting about what we're organizing here. So with that, now that I've teed you up, talk about our response.
Absolutely. Thanks, Michael. What you pointed out is, I think, the thing I'm most excited about is that we are coupling the no with a yes. I mean, I think the no is going to be fun. So I'll start, yeah. I'll start there. A group of people throughout the region organized through the Pacific Northwest Forest Climate Alliance are planning to come to the World Forestry Center on Wednesday and hang out outside. It's a beautiful place right by the zoo. Lots of nice trees, and talk about and sing about and have plays about who will own the forest? Who will own the air? Who will own the water? You know, we really want to draw attention in some ways to the absurdity of what they're even talking about, and the fact that that is a question that's okay to ask and answer with a bunch of capital. So we're inviting people. I kind of almost think of it as a celebratory event. I mean, the tone that we're working to create is not directly confrontational. We might imply that confrontation is a part of forest activism. It absolutely has been over the years, that direct confrontation in the woods is a tool that activists have used to great success in protecting particular places. But our role on Wednesday, September 27th, will be to draw attention to how many people care about the forest and to how the question that they're asking is the wrong question, and that there's a lot of damaging impacts by people who are looking at the forest as their piggy bank. So we'll have people from locally impacted communities talking, people who have experienced firsthand what it's like to live near the financialized forests. We will have people talking about the issues of land ownership and land back, because at the base, all of this is indigenous land that has been stolen first by the federal government and then sold to private interests and private capital. So that will happen. There will be a theatrical performance or two. There's probably going to be a brass band. So I think it will be a really fun time. There will also be plenty of time to get to know other people who are interested in engaging this question. I think we'll also try and engage in dialogue with the people who are participating in the conference and see if they want to talk some things through with us. So we really are putting out a broad invitation for people to come and be part of that. That'll be from, we'll start at 8 a.m., go at least till 2. If we're having a good time, we might stay all day at the World Forestry Center on September 27th.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, that's September 27th, starting first thing in the morning and hopefully going all day. Again, you can go to forestsoverprofits.org to learn more and sign up to get involved and get updates. How about the alternative conference the next day? I think we already covered kind of why we want to have this alternative conference, because we think it's really important, you know, to point towards a real vision forward. So talk a little bit more about the themes we're going to explore there and anything else you want to talk about relating to the conference.
Sure. So the next day is when we really get to dig into that yes. We're calling it the Forests Over Profits Conference. We're like flipping that idea of priority over, and it's going to be starting at 10 a.m. at the Unitarian Church in downtown Portland. We're going to provide refreshments and lunch and a lot of great speakers with time for discussion and questions after E. Some of the ones that I know are confirmed will be our very own Chuck Willer from Coast Range Association, who will be able to get more in depth into visions of how we can do land reform that will make it impossible for the conversations around maximum capital exploitation of forests to happen. One person I'm very excited about is Sarah Doimling. She has been managing Xena Forest for about 30 years. And her real focus is to have economics and ecology work together in tandem, to be able to create livelihood from a forest without degrading the ecological nature of the land. And I've been hearing about Sarah for years and how wonderful her forest is. And I'm really looking forward to her presentation and conversation about how this is possible and how also the existing economic structure makes it difficult for small forest owners like her to really thrive. Mm-hmm. I know we're also going to have Thomas Joseph from the Indigenous Environmental Network talking. He really focuses on carbon offsets and when they don't work and when they work, and can educate us about what a real approach to better carbon accounting would be. And then a couple more speakers that I'm excited about. John Brush, who has done a lot of work on, how to even say this, on ownership beyond individual ownership. So how can we have land that doesn't have a specific owner? Through a combination of land trusts, of easement, of ground leases that disperse ownership beyond individuals, beyond corporations. And even some examples, there's an exciting example from New Zealand right now of a national park that got transferred to itself. So the land title is actually the land's own. And we'll give some examples of a movement towards completely re-understanding or de-emphasizing what we mean by ownership.
Well,
and then we're,
oh, sorry. Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm very excited to learn more about a national park owning itself.
I know,
sorry,
right?
Sorry to interrupt.
No, it's pretty cool. And then I know we're going to end the day with some guests. The timing just worked out that we were able to host the Stop Cop City Roadshow, folks coming from Atlanta, Georgia, who, you know, this is a slightly different flavor, but it's so in the mix of what we're talking about. They've been trying to protect a public forest from becoming a basically a huge urban playground for militarized police to practice warfare against the people. It encapsulates all the things we're talking about, mm-hmm. around militarization, around capitalism, around deforestation, around questions of who has access to the land, who controls the land. And so we're going to end with their presentation and ways for people to engage in that really important battle that's going on right now in the land stuff.
Absolutely. I'm excited to have them involved. I think that is a kind of just the absolute nexus of a lot of the currents we're talking about. So, yeah. So what are we asking of our listeners? If somebody's hearing this and is excited to do more, I've mentioned that website, forestsoverprofits.org, a couple times, but beyond just going to that website, like, what are we asking people to do?
And the first thing I always ask people to do is start having conversations with each other about these issues. And if you feel like you don't know enough about it, if you've been thinking like, gosh, I keep seeing this parcel of land and it's clear cut and I don't know what to do, I would dig into existing resources, and then I would come and meet us and hang out and have those side conversations that will be happening during the rally and during the conference. You know, like Michael said, the Coast Range Association is a great place to start. Chuck's research and writing on the financialization of forestry has been incredible in educating so many people, including myself, who used to just focus on public lands. This is a totally different thing. So talk about it, learn about it, and then absolutely, if you can, if you're able, I know it's the middle of the day, in the middle of a week, but if you can, connecting with people in person, of course, is wonderful. As many of us know now in this post-COVID times, we've lost a little bit of our, I don't know, those social networks that really hold us together and help us see that other people are also in this fight and also questioning the same things that we are. Like, why is it like this? And then what can we do? And then that last question, like, what can we do about it, is honestly something we're all still trying to figure out. Like, mm-hmm. I think that this is a great step in highlighting the problem and showing some possible way forward. But at the end of the day, as I said, this is just capitalism working like it's supposed to. The poor are getting poorer, the rich are getting richer, the land is suffering. And it's bigger than any one of us can do anything about. But it also takes all of us doing something to try and shift that system. really, we need fundamental system change. And the more we get out there and have these conversations and build a movement that has that at its basis, I think the closer we'll get to it.
And so once again, yeah, if you can join us for at either September 27th at the World Forestry Center as we rally, protest, and celebrate, please do that. If you can join us the next day at the First Unitarian Church downtown Portland on the 28th of September, please do that. If you can do both, even greater. And failing that, if you're just interested, can't make it, you can always go to coastrange.org. You can email me, michael@coastrange.org. Finally, as we wrap up, you touched on this. This is something that I meant to get into right at the top. But one of the reasons that we really think it's important to highlight the Who Will Own the Forest conference is it is focused specifically on private timberlands where the vast majority of logging occurs. So I wonder if you wanted to say a couple things as we wrap up about why it's so important to be refocusing our efforts on private timberlands.
Absolutely. We have had great success at shifting the dynamic of forest management on public lands. We haven't won, of course, but people know how to fight for public lands now. Mm-hmm. And during all that time, during all those timber wars, we just let the private lands go, because it was very unclear how to change the management or how to change the ownership structures. And so what we've learned now is we can no longer continue to do that, especially as there's been this escalation of the financialization of forests with outside of the state Wall Street interests. And so now the stakes are really high for private lands. And I think that that's why people are looking for ways to highlight this issue, ways to bring it to the public, that even though we need to keep focused on improving public lands management, like they're still logging old growth in national forests, we have to weave private lands forests into the mix, especially the ones that are focused on moving that money from Oregon's communities, even Oregon's companies, and into the pockets of Wall Street investors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it just doesn't benefit anybody here.
No, very, very few. And the last thing I'll add there is because our private lands, which I live right in the middle of, our private industrial timberlands are so degraded and are cut on such short rotation cycles, they actually offer the most relative benefit if we mm-hmm. can improve the conditions on the ground here in terms of carbon sequestration. So
that's right. I haven't even talked about climate change this whole time.
Yeah.
Climate change, like we're in a climate emergency and logging is one of the biggest carbon polluters in Oregon. Like
Absolutely.
We have to address that. Like one of the best ways that Oregon as a state can address the climate crisis is by improving our forest management to sequester more carbon.
Absolutely.
Yeah, let's not lose that in the face of everything else we're talking about.
All right. Well, on that note, Brenna, thank you so much for joining me. And I will look forward to seeing you at the rally and the conference, and hopefully to everyone listening as well.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. It's been a pleasure.
And that's our show. Thanks so much for listening. One more time, go to forestsoverprofits.org to learn more and get involved. And we'll hope to see you at the World Forestry Center on September 27th in Portland, and again in Portland downtown at the First Unitarian Church on September 28th for our alternative conference. Thanks for listening to Coast Range Radio. Talk to you soon.
Tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Hello, my name is Jeff, and I host a show entitled A Matter of Public Records that is broadcast on KBOO the second and fourth Saturdays of every month from 3 to 6 a.m. It is a somewhat eclectic show where the song choices are often instinctual, based on the prior song. Tune in and you might hear some instrumentals, some slightly avant-garde music, punk, post-punk, indie rock, jazz. To my ears, it is a classic late-night radio show. That's A Matter of Public Records, every second and fourth Saturday from 3 to 6 a.m. on KABOO 90.7 FM.
Hey, yo, this is Clipping. You're listening to KABOO.